Well, good morning and a welcome to each one of you out this morning. It's good to be here with you. Good to have everybody out here. And I have been blessed so far this morning. Thank you, Anthony, for sharing this morning. The devotions was, I think, a very important reminder for us. And you know, as I woke up yesterday morning and I looked out the window, it almost looked like a picture of the globe where it's like two-thirds water and one-third land. And I thought, well, maybe God's trying to tell me to preach about a flood or something. But I ended up deciding to stick with what I had felt all week God was calling me to preach on. You know, April 26th of this year, a day most of us probably woke up, lived our normal lives, didn't think anything of it. But it's a day that for a certain group of people will be remembered as long as modern running continues. And it was a feat at the London Marathon that had never happened before, and it was a record people had thought unbreakable. That morning, there was an Ethiopian man by the name of Yomif Kajela. He was lined up at the starting line waiting for the sound of the gun. This was his first ever official marathon, and on his feet that day he was wearing a pair of Adidas Evo 3 shoes. It was a brand new shoe that had never been used in an official marathon before. On this day, Yomif would smash the 2-hour barrier by 19 seconds. It had been previously thought to run 26.1 miles. 2 hours was a number that would never be broken. On that day, beside him on the line was a Kenyan man by the name of Sebastian Sawe, and he too was wearing the pair of Evo 3s and was hoping to break that 2-hour mark as well. For 25 miles, these two men ran side by side, and at mile 26, Sebastian Sawe began to pull ahead, and he would end up finishing the race 11 seconds ahead of Kijela. And I think of Yomif a little bit, a little sorry for him. He would have won the world record had it not been for this other man that was running with him. But it was a remarkable time, and it was a feat that, like I said, it was thought impossible. And on the same day, two men end up breaking that record. And the race had hardly finished when people began to talk about the shoes. Well, it was a brand new pair of shoes, never been worn before. Obviously, the shoes had something to do with the incredible time they put in. You know, if you're not a runner, that kind of a time doesn't seem as hard to put that into context. For context, 26.1 miles, it's a little bit past where the new road is in Waco, where you turn off to go like into Walmart. That's from here. So you think about running that in 2 hours, it's like, how is that even possible? I don't care if you would give me these shoes, I couldn't run it that fast, and I don't think any of us could even get anywhere close to that. So were the shoes responsible? Probably a little bit. Like, if they would have been wearing Crocs, they couldn't have done it that fast. But what I found interesting is those shoes have been almost impossible to get a hold of because they've been selling out as fast as they hit the shelves. And why is that? It's because people have thought, well, I want to see how fast I can run in this, even though most of them realize they'll probably never run 2-hour time. It's likely going to be the most popular shoe come fall marathon season. But my inspiration for the message today, and I'll get back to the story later on, was found in Hebrews 12, 1-2. And I'm going to read that, just the first two verses in Hebrews 12. Wherefore, seeing we are encompassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which doth so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for joy was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. So that verse, as I read it earlier this week, came across that verse earlier this week, I felt inspired for this message, and I've titled the message, Run Like Paul. And just a little disclaimer here, I realize that there's a lot of dispute maybe about whether Paul wrote the book of Hebrews. None of that's important, so we don't know if he wrote these words. But I do want to look at Paul's life, take some lessons from running. I do find it interesting, Paul spoke a lot about running in his epistles, more than I realized. As I started looking, he would oftentimes reference that to life and going through that. And so I pulled out a few lessons that I'd like to look at this morning. You know, for years, long-distance running has intrigued me, and I don't know why. I'm not a long-distance runner, but I read a book years ago entitled Born to Run, and in there I was introduced to the idea of people running what they call ultramarathons. That's anything over 26.1 miles, and it's amazed me that that's even possible for a person to run that long without collapsing out of sheer exhaustion. In that book was the story of Gordy Ansley, who sort of was the, I don't know if he was the founder of it, maybe intentionally, unintentionally, I'm not sure. He was a veterinarian who raced horses. And in 1973, he had a horse for the Western States 100 miler. And off they went with this horse. About mile 30, his horse came up lame, and he was forced to withdraw. So the next year, he said, I think I can do this on my own 2 feet. And he went and ran the 100-mile race in 1974, finishing about 20 minutes before the 24-hour cutoff. And he actually beat some of the slower horses in that. And that inspired this long-distance running. People were like, well, if he can do it, I can do that as well. So 100 miles. Through the mountains. It's remarkable that humans are even capable of doing that. The first point I'd like to pull out that I learned from Paul was run with purpose. You know, almost everybody that gets into running does so with a purpose. They have a reason for running. For some people, it's the idea of losing some weight or maybe staying in shape. Some people just like the discipline of running. Some like the social interactions. It's become a big thing anymore, run clubs and that type of thing where people get together and it's a party and they run for 3 miles or so. Some people love the competitive nature of running and they run for the excitement of race day. And today, it's a hot day. But if you would go to Cameron Park today, you would probably encounter a lot of people running. And they're not running because it's such a pleasant day that, you know, they want to be out there running. And some of them enjoy it. I'm not sure how many people enjoy it when it's this hot. But if you were to stop one of those runners and say, well, why are you out here running? They would probably have a reason for it. Because truth be told, much easier to sit on the couch on a day like today, take a nap, maybe snack on food all afternoon. But these people have gotten out to run. They had a purpose for it. You know, something that takes effort, takes some want to. Paul went through his Christian life as a runner with a purpose. You know, he didn't stop preaching because of inconvenience. He was stoned. He was beaten. He was thrown into prison. He had every reason in the world to stop preaching, to lay down his ministry, and to or maybe take his ministry underground, to do something a little bit less of a problem for those people. But he says in 1 Corinthians 9, 16 and 17, he says, for though I preach the gospel, I have nothing to glory of. For necessity is laid upon me, yea, woe is unto me if I preach not the gospel. For this I do the gospel's sake, that I may be a partaker thereof. You, Paul felt compelled to the ministry. He felt compelled to preach. And so he was. Because in Acts 9 we read, the instructions that God gave to Ananias when he says, "But the Lord said unto him, Go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and children of Israel." Paul understood the mission he had, and he lived life with that purpose in mind. He never wavered until the end. Towards the end of his life, he wrote to Timothy in 2 Timothy 4:7. He says, "I've fought a good fight. I've finished my course. I've kept the faith." Paul finished the course because he had a passion for his calling. He did what runners call running through the tape. I don't know if you've ever heard that term before, but it's running until you reach the finish line and never wavering as you close. So interestingly enough, this year in the Los Angeles Marathon, there was a runner who had a big lead. As he was going down the final stretch, he began to tire and slow down. And he didn't realize he was about to be caught. And as he neared the tape, he raised his arms in celebration, and just then he was passed and lost the race by a fraction of a second. He did not, what runners call, run through the tape. He began to falter towards in the last several hundred feet. He was so near to winning, and yet he wasn't able to finish in first. Paul understood the race is not won two-thirds of the way through. Interestingly enough, in that same marathon, the Los Angeles Marathon, there was some controversy this year because, you know, when Paul talks later, and I'll read that, where he says, you know, there's only one winner. Well, in the marathons anymore, everybody that finishes gets a finisher's medal, and that's been the case for a long time. But in Los Angeles, for some reason this year, they said if you complete 18 miles, you will get a finisher's medal, which I'm not sure if they understand what finishers mean. There was a lot of people that ask about that. But that's not how the race of life is. We don't complete 18 miles and it's good enough. We have to finish the race that was set before us. And Paul did that. The other thing Paul did is he led by example. And in 1 Corinthians 11:1, he writes, "Be ye followers of me, even as I am of Christ." And that is a mouthful. I don't know if you've ever told someone, "Well, just do what I'm doing." Puts an enormous amount of pressure on you as a person. And Paul was willing to take that on. He said, "Look, I know it's hard. Just follow me. Just do what I'm doing. It will get you there." You know, he understood that Sunday morning preaching wasn't enough. He was determined to set an example for the people that were following him. You've probably all heard the saying, preach the gospel, and when necessary, use words. Because the example that we set for others can make a huge impact, a bigger impact than our words alone. People are watching us. And going back to the story that I started with, you know, the Adidas marketing team, they knew what they were doing when they selected those two runners to run with their product. They knew that in 5-10 years, the name Sebastian Sawe will be forgotten by most runners, and yet they will see the video of that two-hour barrier being broken, and there on their feet, the Adidas logo will be prominently featured. You know, if they'd have got someone like me to debut their shoes, it wouldn't have caused the same kind of stir. I would certainly have done it a lot cheaper, but I'm not sure it would have given them the results they wanted. I don't think just barely staggering across the finish line 4+ hours later would have sold any shoes. That is, if I could have made it. But when we wear the name of Christ, we must live as Christ lived. Otherwise, we'll bring shame, not just to ourselves, but to Christ. And that was what they recognized. They recognized these people, these two young men, they are going to be representing our brand, and they wanted two people that could represent their brand well. Interestingly enough, they did select a third person to wear their shoes, a lady, and I didn't write her name down, but she won the world record time for women in that same race. So they were feeling pretty good about about their shoe, let's just say, after that race was done. Another interesting part of that story, as I was reading up on it, was that Sebastian Sawe had asked his brother to be his pacer for the race. And it's fairly common for elite runners to have a pacer. They call them, in the industry, they're called a rabbit. And the pacer's job, the rabbit's job, is to run ahead and to set a pace. And that way the runner doesn't need to focus on anything other than following the shoes in front of them. And Sawe's brother was able to run out ahead for 18 miles before he was out of energy. But that 18 miles helped Sawe to set a pace that was sustainable, and in the early stages of the race, take away all his distractions. One of the rabbit's jobs, and they know this going in, is, or one of the things with the rabbit is, typically they will expend all of their energy trying to get whoever they're pacing across the finish line with the best time. And a lot of times they don't win the race themselves. And they oftentimes come in way late because they put forth so much energy in the early stages. But they do it to benefit the runner behind them. And I think of a mentor. We as Christians should strive to be mentors to each other and to the weak, to those that come behind, that they can see us as an example. And, you know, for a pacer, the race is not about him. It's about the person he's pacing. And sometimes that's what it's like as mentors. We sometimes have to do things that we don't want to do ourselves. It requires sacrifice. And yet, it can be a great benefit to the other person. A benefit that sometimes we don't fully understand. I was talking to a man just this last week when I was at the funeral service for Eddie Davis, and this man had been a mentor to Eddie for the last number of years, and he shared some of the struggles and some of the things they had been through together. And yet at the end he said it was worth every minute. If he could go back, he would do it all over again. That is what we should strive for as Christians, to be like Paul, to say, follow me. I'll take charge. I'll lead the way. I will endure some of the sacrifices along the way so that you can come behind and have it a little bit easier. The third point I would like to look at, and this is probably the biggest point for most runners, and that is to be disciplined. In 1 Corinthians 9:24-27, Paul writes, "Know ye not that they which run a race all, but one receiveth the prize? So run that ye may obtain. And every man that striveth for the mastery is temperate in all things. Now they do it to obtain a corruptible crown, but we an incorruptible. I therefore so run, not as uncertainty, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. But I keep under my body and bring into subjection, lest that by any means, when I have preached to others, I myself should be a castaway." You know, every serious runner will tell you that they do not casually approach a race. And, you know, I was surprised to learn how many thousands of dollars every year are spent by athletes on nutrition and training. In fact, I would think the nutrition industry is probably one of the most lucrative industries today. It's just something that they will spend their life savings on proper nutrition. You know, a serious runner that is running a long distance race, the weeks leading up to that race, he's not out there playing video games, eating potato chips, living life as though trying to be the most comfortable, conserving his energy for the race ahead. No, most of them, I find this fascinating, but they will actually keep a diary for everything they eat, and they will log every food they put in their mouth, and they'll count up the calories and see how much energy they're getting from each one of those. They'll come up with a training plan that every day, rain or shine, they are doing a certain amount of running. And pushing themselves. they bring them their body into subjection. That way they are ready to run on race day. You know, Paul is telling us in chapter 9 here that we need to run as though we're trying to get something, as though to obtain. You know, if we're not taking in the proper nutrition in our spiritual lives, it's kind of like a runner that is not taking it. It's like a runner that's not taking in the proper nutrition in the days, even on race day. Your time with God is as important to a Christian's life as a proper amount of carbs is to a runner. You know, it can be the difference between finishing a race and dropping out. And the same is in our life. No amount of willpower is going to get us through to the end. And I sometimes, I've heard of stories of, you know, runners that have not taken it seriously. And they think, well, I'll just keep my legs moving. But eventually, especially on these 50 to 100 mile races, your legs don't keep moving if they're not being fueled properly. And the amount of calories that they're forced to take is almost unthinkable. In fact, they said that some of these races, they can't just eat food because food takes up too much space in their stomach but doesn't provide the amount of energy that they need to continue. So they're taking gels and things that are just packed with all the nutrients they need. In life, if we just hope to get by, hope to finish without putting in the proper nutrition, we're not going to make it. We need to be spending time with God each day, both in His Word and in prayer, to be ready and to be able to complete the race that we have before us. In verse 26, Paul talks about running not as uncertainty, so fight I, not as one that beateth the air. And some translations would refer to fight as boxing. And if you think about a boxer in the ring, he doesn't begin swinging wildly without any plan. He'd leave himself very exposed. Instead, he has a plan. He's very strategic about how he uses his punches. He doesn't just swing randomly. And so is a runner when he's setting off on a course. Typically a runner has a pace time that he's thinking about. He's like, well, I can run a 5-minute mile today, but I'm not going to run a 4-minute mile in the early stages of the race because I won't be able to finish. So they come with a plan, and then they try to make sure they have enough of energy that they can complete the race. You know, to bring your body into subjection, we need to make hard decisions today so that we can benefit later on. Training is hard and often involves waking up earlier, getting out even when the weather is not good, and nobody's there to cheer you on. But come race day, that work or that lack of work will become very apparent. You know, a runner understands that there's going to be some unpleasantness along the way of attaining. In Romans 5, verse 3 to 5, Paul writes, and not only so, but we glory in tribulations also, knowing that tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given us. You know, Paul was unafraid to face the difficulties of life. And when I read these verses, I think of muscle building and the way that a runner will condition their legs, or even a strength trainer will condition his body. You know, when you push yourself beyond the limits that you're accustomed to, your muscles, a change starts to happen in your muscles. Your muscles begin to tear a little bit. And it ends up making us very sore. That's why we have sore muscles, because we've pushed them beyond what they're used to doing, what they're accustomed to doing. I think of when my dad and brothers several years ago went and hiked the Grand Canyon. When we came up out of there, we got in the car and we drove for about an hour and stopped for supper. And when we got out, we almost couldn't walk because our legs hurt so bad. They were all tore up. But you know what happens with sore muscles? Those little tears heal back, but they don't heal back to what they had been. They heal back stronger. And, you know, Paul understood something here that it's hard for us to wrap our minds around, that tribulation, we don't like it. None of us would go out of our way. I don't think any of us would go out of our way to experience tribulation. But it does us some good, is what Paul is saying. You know, it's not that runners, maybe some runners, but for the most part, runners don't wake up in the morning and say, man, I wish I was sore this morning. I'm going to make sure tomorrow I'm sore, and they run out as hard as they can. Instead, it's like they say, well, to improve, I have to push myself. I have to do more. And that's how they get sore muscles. That's how they win races, is by improving the muscles. And Paul tells us that in life we glory in our tribulations, as ridiculous as it sounds, because he says it worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And why would we ever hope for something if we already had everything? And when you realize that, you realize why tribulation can sometimes be a little necessary, as hard as it is for us to rejoice in them. And the fourth point I'd like to leave with you is, when you can't run, walk. You know, running is good and all, but what happens when you can't run anymore? What happens when life hands you so much you can't bear to continue? And, you know, one of our favorite sayings in America is, when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Right? You pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you power through it. But is that always possible? And is that always healthy? Maybe I should also ask. You know, one of the most well-known American Indians was a Sioux warrior by the name of Crazy Horse. And Crazy Horse is best known for leading the Sioux into battle and victory at the Battle of the Little Bighorn. But my favorite story of Crazy Horse was once when he was being pursued by some other Indians. He was riding on horseback, and he was able to stay ahead of these Indians, even though they were very, very determined to catch him. And this is according to the Lakota oral tradition. So there's parts of the story that have just been handed down. So there's some questions about how embellished some of it is. I still love the story. The way Crazy Horse was able to keep ahead, they were going through the Black Hills of South Dakota, which is a very mountainous region, is that he would walk his horse uphill, and then the horse was refreshed and ready to go on the downhill stretches. And there was one Indian in particular, No Water, who was determined to catch him and actually rode at least one, if not more than that, more horses than that, to death in his pursuit of Crazy Horse. And they would get close, and they would see him walking his horse up the hill, and they would be closing as they'd be going uphill. But as soon as they would crest the hill, Crazy Horse was off and galloping, and their horse had been completely spent. And it's a tactic that is actually used in ultramarathons. It's very common that these ultramarathon runners will walk up the mountains, walk up the hills, because they've learned that by running up a hill, the time that you save is not worth the energy that you expend. And so it's better to conserve a little bit of energy when the going gets tough. You know, in Galatians 1, Paul refers to a time, briefly to a time that we know very little about. And we have to maybe put some pieces together, and I hope I'm allowed to do that this morning, because we're not sure exactly what all he's referring to here. But in Galatians 1, 15 to 18, we read, "But when it pleased God, who separated me from my mother's womb and called me by his grace, to reveal his Son in me, that I might preach him among the heathen, immediately I conferred not with flesh and blood, neither went I up to Jerusalem to them which were apostles before me, but I went into Arabia and returned again unto Damascus, Then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and abode with him 15 days. Here we read of Paul going to Arabia for a time, and the timing would indicate that it was fairly soon after his conversion. We don't really know how long or for what purpose he was gone for, but we read in Acts 9 that as soon as Paul had received strength following his conversion, he began to preach in Damascus, and that many days after that, the Jews decided to kill him. So it's possible he went to Arabia to escape persecution. But it's also possible that he went to Arabia to spend time with God, for some solitude, for some away time, to be renewed and refreshed. And you know, sometimes we as humans need that as well. Sometimes we need to step away from all the good things that we're doing and to slow down and catch our breath, to spend time away from our ministry and allow God to speak to us and to minister to us. And a lot of scholars would believe that was Paul's purpose for going to Arabia, even though he doesn't talk much more about that, and we don't know for sure. But because we have a race to run, we don't need to burn ourselves out before we reach the finish line. We need to be mindful of all of the things I talked about so far, but also we need to, when the going is too hard for us, to be okay with stepping back a little bit, spending time with God. And if we need to go to Pennsylvania for a while, or Wyoming, or Indiana, or Ohio, wherever your place is, to get away a little bit and to allow God to refresh and renew us, that way we are ready to run again when the time comes. And our goal needs to be not only to run like Paul, but to finish like Paul as well. But at the end of our lives, we can say like Paul did, I have fought a good fight, I've finished my course, and I've kept the faith. So with that, would you kneel for a word of prayer? Father in heaven, we thank you for today. Thank you for bringing us together to worship you together. Thank you for health and strength. Thank you for all the visitors that were able to make it out today. And Father, I just pray that you would help us to run with purpose, to run, to be disciplined in our run, to bring others with us, to mentor and to guide, and to also be able to walk when we can no longer run. And I just pray that you would just guide and direct us this week. Commit ourselves to you, and we pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.